From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the city of Rochester when a growing list of restaurants closed. In the past 2 years, the pandemic has accelerated the end of business operations for a number of popular local establishments. And we can actually go beyond Rochester. You can go to the suburbs, you can go to Greece, you can go to the Finger Lakes, you can go to Geneva. I mean, the list is not all pandemic related. Some of it is, some of it's not. But it's been growing in the last few years. Harry G's, Unterbeergarten, Starry Nights, Tap and Mallet, Carmine's, Relish, Red Dove in Geneva, all closed. Not every closure, again, is fully driven by this pandemic, but it has been a hard 2 years. And just a few weeks ago, Time magazine offered this headline, quote, "Profit doesn't exist anymore. Restaurants that barely survived COVID-19 closures now face labor, inflation, and supply chain crises," end quote. That seemed a bit hyperbolic, but Time notes that even in normal economic conditions, as many as 61% of independently operated restaurants fail within 3 years of opening, according to a widely cited 2005 analysis from Ohio State University researchers. They write, quote, "After nearly 2 years of abysmal profits, restaurant owners are being hit by a cascading series of new challenges. Inflationary pressures on key ingredients and paper products are driving up their operating costs. A global supply chain crunch has stymied delivery of everything from cream cheese to chicken wings to portion cups for salad dressing. And the entire hospitality industry is struggling to hire and retain enough employees to operate," end quote. A September survey from the National Restaurant Association found that 85% of American restaurants have suffered lost margins or income during the pandemic. So what comes next? The winter COVID surge has once again squeezed the industry, but numbers, COVID numbers, they are coming down quickly. It offers some hope for a vibrant late winter and spring. I know the last month especially has seemed like just another run through the pandemic mill. But things are changing. No one can predict the future. No one knows where we're going with different variants and whatnot. But there is a lot of reason to believe that just a few weeks from now, things will be very different. And this hour, a conversation about where restaurants are going next year. In studio with us, the chef and owner of Lento is Art Rogers. Art, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also with us on the phone is Kelly Metris, the owner of Salinas and Knox, chapter president of the New York State Restaurant Association. Kelly, it is a Village Gate brawl here today. Welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Kevin McCann is the owner of McCann's Local Meats in the South Wedge. Kevin, welcome. Thanks for being back with us.
Howdy. How are y'all?
Well, and this is just a sampling here, but let me get sort of, let's take the temperature of our guests on the program now. I don't know how blunt Art wants to be on the program. He's usually pretty blunt, but you know, you said that January is never a great month anyway, I think is fair to say. How are things right now?
Very slow, extremely slow. Last week was in our top three slowest weeks, and we opened in 2007.
Top three slowest weeks ever?
Ever, before people even know we existed from when we opened. This week doesn't look much better, but like you said in your intro, I think a lot of it is Omicron-related, and I'm trying to just focus on being positive and hoping the business comes back before Valentine's Day, which is a big time for us at Lento.
So a positive outlook would be January is always slow. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay. This is it's slower than normal, but you know that January is going to be slow. And right now the hope is maybe in a few weeks, you know, we're 3 weeks away from Valentine's Day. You would love it to see the numbers keep going down for 3 weeks and make people feel more comfortable going out to eat in 3 weeks?
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Okay. And how about the spring, looking ahead? I mean, is it your feeling that things have to turn to a certain level so you can keep doing what you're doing? I mean, are you close to any kind of a breaking point at all? How do you feel, Art?
No, not quite yet. We were actually okay in the spring and summer because people were comfortable eating outdoors. So something that changed for us during COVID was we were busier in the warmer months when we normally drop off in business because people wanted to sit outside and we have nice outdoor eating area. But, you know, we didn't get the things that we are used to getting in the spring, the college graduations and things like that. We got them, a slower version of those. We were still, we still saw some business from it, but not like pre-COVID.
Okay, so this may be a post-Omicron spring and summer. Maybe a very different dynamic than even a year ago when people were getting vaccinated, because now anybody who wants to be vaccinated is pretty much vaccinated. More younger people getting vaccinated. Fewer people in the population are not vaccinated. And for the people, well, frankly, for everybody now, there's a huge number of people who have convalesced from COVID infection. So this could be the first real, it's, we're not post-pandemic yet, but it might, I'm an optimist. It could feel that way even more so than last year. Do you feel that way?
I do. Yep. I mirror your thoughts there.
Okay. Kelly, where are things for you now? What's January typically like, and what is it like for you right now?
We are just about half of our pre-COVID sales for January. For us personally, like Art said, like summer made us all feel like we were going to get better and progress, and we knew that winter was going to be tough. What I think that the thing that's going to affect restaurants moving forward is that compounding stress and financial instability that's been happening, that you start to finally like break even again and then something else hits. So for example, for us, January has been extraordinarily awful, not just in lower sales, but the amount of payroll that's had to go out because of COVID pay and paid sick leave. And I'm not saying I don't want to pay those things. I'm just saying that it's a compounded effect on the business, because while all this was happening and we were mandated to shut down, they were also passing new laws for what we have to pay out. So for our payroll for January so far, we are at about 85% of our sales.
Okay. What is typical pre-pandemic? What's that percentage usually look like?
We run about 40%. We try to keep our payroll up. We try to pay our staff really well. So we try to stay at about 40% of our sales.
But it's now it's 85%. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And that's mostly due to COVID pay, quarantine pay, paid sick leave.
Okay.
And then the overtime for the people that have to work to keep us open.
Are you an optimist that we're not that far away from seeing a significant turn here?
I'm an optimist. I just feel that I'm very fortunate because I don't worry about my business being open next year, but I know that there's a lot of people that have not been able to handle the stress of all of this. So I'm an optimist for my own business. I just look at the rest of the industry and I worry about what's going to happen in the next couple of months and how much people can handle.
That's actually, and I think, an important point here. I mean, I mentioned off the top some of the names that we and listeners have shared. Again, not all of it directly pandemic related. Some are, but I'm sure we're even missing some, Kelly. And I'm sure the Restaurant Association is very concerned about that. Realistically, how close are we to seeing more closure in the industry?
Honestly, after this month, if I'm feeling it to the level I'm feeling it with the size of my business, I would imagine that a lot of small places are probably on the verge. I think that you're at the point where a lot of your funding that you've received has been used up for various reasons. And then, you know, the very slow winter, and then with all of the COVID going around and everyone calling in sick and being quarantined to pay for all of that. I think it's going to be an interesting couple of months.
Okay.
It's a snowball effect.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin McCann's the owner of McCann's Local Meats, which has also done a lot in recent years to expand, not just being a meat counter. They got a lot going on there, but I know the last 2 years have been tough. What's the state of the business now, Kevin?
I would echo what my other two colleagues and friends have said in the way that, business is certainly down. We had our worst year in 2021 that we've had since we first opened. excuse me. my feelings in general are exactly what they've been throughout this entire time, which is, you know, as an entrepreneur, like, you have to be able to be nimble and be able to kind of bob and weave and figure things out on the fly with lots of different things and at lots of different times. But, you know, this is a long time to be bobbing and weaving. I think everybody in the industry is starting to get to feel the fatigue and certainly a little bit of that fear of, okay, so we're watching some places around us dwindle and die on the vine. And are we next? Are we not? Are we going to be able to survive? Are we going to be able to scrape it together? Like Kelly said, you know, funding is pretty much exhausted. And that did a lot to help a lot of places, including us. But, you know, now it's down to, as the world feels like everything is getting back to normal, are we actually getting back to any sense of normality again? Or are we going to have to, as a full society, kind of pivot a little bit into what our definition of that normality is?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's impossible to predict. I will say, this is not meant to be sort of be provocative or controversial. I hope it's people take this in the spirit I intend it. Because the pandemic is still, 10,000 people died in this country last week. It's still very real and very shocking. But we as a species, we are not meant to be this separated. I think there's a real cost to continued separation. This isn't like an anti-mandate or an anti-government rant at all. Everybody's doing their best. Public health is doing their best. And thank God they are. Can you imagine what it would be like to work in a hospital setting right now? What the last month must have been like? What the next few weeks may be like? They are heroes. They are heroes. But there is a real cost, I think, to getting used to feeling separated. Getting used to feeling like, well, I'll just order everything on Amazon now. I'll just give Jeff Bezos and that crew my money. We don't need stores. We don't need physical stores. I guess we'll just do takeout. We don't need to sit down together. I think there are real costs to that. I'm not saying that outweighs or whatever. It's just an observation that I don't want some of this stuff to become permanent, I guess. Is that too controversial, Kevin? What do you think?
Not to get to any of the controversial nature of it, but I will say that there, just from my experience, there is a very different feeling inside of my building when we have people in seats enjoying food and just the energy of the room and kind of how it, I don't know if you're allowed to say this in 2022, but it's infectious. Everybody feels it. Everybody, it's fun and it's enjoyable and it makes you enjoy your food more and it helps you enjoy the rest of your day more. And I agree with you that, it's been our company policy from the outset of this whole thing to keep our employees and our customers in as safe an environment as possible. But at the same time, I think that if you talk to any restaurant owner or any establishment owner, that we're all really hoping to see customers come back. And, I think if you got honest statements from all of us as well, we would tell you that, the pressure and stress that you feel of not just for your business or not just for like your family's, well-being, but also your customers and your staff and how many people you kind of feel responsible for, with regards to owning and operating a business and sort of the emotional toll that can take on you, especially on a monthly basis as you're looking at your bottom line. But, hopefully this does all kind of figure itself out pretty soon.
How do you see it, Kelly?
I am in heavy agreement with what Kevin said. I think the fatigue, right? I think everybody everywhere has a level of COVID fatigue. I think you see it in a lot of people. But as a business owner, and like Kevin said, we are responsible for not just ourselves and our families, but also for our employees. And I think that gets lost a lot. I think restaurants get demonized sometimes. And I think that I know how I feel about my employees, and I know how Kevin and Art feel about theirs. I think you have a really good panel here of people that are there and taking care of theirs and the community around us. It's exhausting. I know 2 years is a really long time to be this exhausted.
Yeah. Does it feel different on a night where you've got a lot of takeout going out the door versus on those days, especially last summer, where it felt something more normal, for lack of a better term, Kelly?
Last summer felt amazing.
Yeah.
It was fun to be at work. I have an amazing team. They were having fun. Our customers are amazing. So it was sad to see that end, and we knew it was going to end. And we didn't come into this winter thinking it was going to be anything like it was over the summer. Omicron really threw us for a loop. We had pretty much half of our staff go out between New Year's and now. And you're just like, how do you keep going?
Yeah.
How long does this? I know that this particular wave is on its way out, you know, and I know that the weather is going to turn back around, and I'm optimistic. I have now had COVID plus my vaccine, so I feel like for the first time I'm not like hiding and trying not to get the people around me sick. But I still got to get to April, May, right? I still got to get to those nice weather days.
I think it could be. I want to hope it's going to be the best year yet for everybody in this industry. I workers, staffs, owners, et cetera. I think it's possible. But do you share the sense that, like, if we get used to this enough, if we get like inured to this, well, I guess I just don't go out now. What's the cost of that?
Well, so every restaurant's different, so I can only speak to the specifics of Lento, and I do believe that we were already shifting, probably as a society, and I don't know if all of humans, but definitely in America, to getting more takeout. I think right before the pandemic, the statistics were 52% takeout / delivery, 48% dine-in. So it was
before the pandemic?
Yeah. It's already moving in that direction. So this, you know, obviously doesn't help, especially for Lento. My food is not really designed to travel. You know, when I put together the concept for my restaurant, it never came in my head to do takeout or food to go, which, you know, like Kevin was saying, we had to bob and weave and we figured out how to do it during the pandemic. And since we've been able to have in-person dining, it has dropped off tremendously. And I'll be honest, I don't really miss it. I mean, it's nice to have the business, but there's something wrong about putting the food that we're making in boxes to go.
What's an example? I mean, Art, by the way, is the only James Beard-nominated chef Rochester's ever had. And there's great people in this industry. So he's obviously outstanding at his craft. What's something that you do, that you make, that every time someone orders it on takeout, you go, all right, we'll send it on takeout, but it sort of kills me a little bit that we're doing that.
Jeez. you know, we always have like a duck breast on that I like to slice nicely and fan out with the sides. And to go, I don't slice it because I don't want it to, you know, I feel like that would make it suffer, but it doesn't look great to me in a box. You know, it's designed to, you know, you're supposed to have that eye appeal as well. And you know, the server puts it in front of you and you're like, wow, this looks great. You know, because people eat with their eyes and you know, obviously we all got to eat. But I'm getting a little burnt out on the food in boxes. And I hope maybe COVID people will be like, you know, we got to get back out. We've been eating out of boxes for 2 years. Maybe it'll reverse the trend. Who knows? That'll be an optimistic take on that negative situation for me.
Casey, I'm going to get your phone call in just a second. Just one more note on this. Lately, I've been watching the show that's kind of messing with my head, and I'm actually thinking about it right now as to why. So the show, it was a one-season show with Maya Rudolph, who I love, and Fred Armisen, and it's called Forever. And it's about a couple who are sort of in different places. They've been married a while. Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen's characters. And Fred Armisen is just fine with the routine. He doesn't need to go out. He likes making dinner at home. He kind of goes to work, comes back, does the same five things every day, and could do the same five things every day for the next 7,000 years and would need no change, doesn't need a whole lot of interaction. And Maya Rudolph is sort of getting older, thinking like, I think I need something different. I kind of have elements of both. I like routine. I've got my morning coffee routine and maybe an evening cocktail or a glass of wine. But that it feels like I'm overly tethered if I'm not also seeing people and seeing friends and having dinner out and traveling a bit. And, you know, meeting somebody to chat and not just doing stuff on Zoom. All of a sudden, I start to feel more like the Maya Rudolph character where I'm going, because I'm not seeing people out. But I'm actually a creature of routine and I kind of love it. So I'm kind of a mix of both. And that's what I want to get back to, is to be able to do both. I mean, you can do it now, but it's just different. So anyway, that's enough of that. Art Rogers, Kelly Metris, Kevin McCann, all here from Lento, Salinas, Knox, McCann's Local Meats. We're talking about the state of the restaurant industry, this tough winter they're in, and the pivot that everybody hopes is coming. Casey in Rochester on the phone first. Hi, Casey. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. This is a topic that's totally near and dear to my heart. I'm retired 30-some-odd years in the restaurant business, food service distribution. So I was the guy that would go in and call upon these folks for the supplies, et cetera, that they needed. I have seen the prices just skyrocket through the roof, and I can't even imagine what it would be like for these folks to manage their businesses and still make a profit today. Are they seeing many, many people drop away because they just can't afford the foods, you know, at $12 for a bowl of soup, $7 for, you know, toasted rarebit and things like that that I'm seeing? I was hoping they could address some of these questions.
Very good questions, Casey. Thank you. And Time Magazine addressed that as well. They brought up supply chain issues and costs of what is in the supply chain impacting every business just about everywhere, but restaurants near the top of the list. So I'll start with Art. How is this hitting you?
It's hitting me, so I'll give you a yes and no.
Okay.
So because of our farm-to-table concept and we buy all local sustainable meat, that meat is already super expensive, and those prices haven't really budged. That goes for a lot of the produce, too. However, things like fryer oil, disposable gloves, things like that that every restaurant has to have quadrupled. Like, they're insanely expensive, and there was a point where both of those items, at least, were, like, N.A., not available at any price, which is, that has fixed itself a little bit, but the price has not dropped during COVID. So I've definitely seen it on some items.
Do you eat that, or do you pass it on the menu?
No, we just eat it.
Got to eat it for now? Yeah.
Yeah.
But long term sustainably, is that not sustainable, or is it? I mean, what happens if that? I have to imagine some of this will work itself out, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just waiting. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, disposable gloves used to be $40 a case. Now they're over $100 a case. Mm. Yeah, and I mean, you gotta have those. So that's a huge increase. I'm just waiting for it to go down. I'm surprised it hasn't yet, but with all the supply chain stuff, I guess it's not surprising.
Kelly Metris, what's been the impact of all of this cost and supply chain issue on you?
Full agreement and all of that. I'm not optimistic about prices coming back down. I think that people like making money, and that the companies that are making money are going to continue to do so on those supplies that they know that we have to have to do our business. I think some of the things that people don't take into consideration are things like the unemployment rate increase. We were forced to shut down multiple times and then turned around and were across the board. All businesses had their unemployment rate raised, which is pretty much a full-time employee that I could be paying. So it's not just that, it's getting an electrician because I need, you know, I have space heaters that I need to plug in, but they're pulling too much electricity and I got to add a line and I can't get an electrician. It just cost me $500 just to get my line tested. It took me 3 months to get the electrician in. So it's everything, like the amount of things that we're balancing and juggling to keep our businesses through the spring. That's the exhaustion part, right? So like it just keeps adding on.
Kevin, where is it impacting you?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both of what you're hearing from the other two as well. Just like Art said, you know, the cost of our goods is a little bit higher than a lot of people in the industry just because of how we source. So, you know, those prices have stayed pretty static. You know, there are certain ways where it kind of rears its ugly head there as well. But, yeah, plastic, aluminum, paper, you know, thank goodness we, you know, render beef fat from our animals to fill our fryer, because I can't imagine what people are going through trying to keep clean fryer oil going that's just that what the prices I see there are just crazy. But yeah, it's also those extras that Kelly's talking about too. I mean, just even the price of gas and electric has gone up, and getting an accurate meter reading from RG&E so that you can have an accurate bill and you can plan yourself out budgeted month to month. You know, we didn't get an accurate meter reading for over a year. We got slapped two times in the last 12 months with just, you know, wild extra charges for, you know, poor estimation or bad meter readings. And, you know, it granted, we're using all of those services, but at the same time, like, you know, this is hard enough without getting slapped with unneeded costs as well. So
this is a whole other show, and I have no expertise, so I have to be careful with this. But my observation is, has anybody ever had their meter read accurately and it saved them money, or inaccurately and it saved them money? It's amazing. Homeowners, businesses, what is happening in the meter reading world? Can somebody email me and explain how that always is wrong and why it just magically ends up in the favor of the companies? Okay. I'm sorry, because I don't have expertise. And if I'm way wrong here, I want to be corrected, and I'll correct it on the record. That is nothing but anecdotal observation. So we're talking to Kevin McCann. Kevin, Kelly, and Art are all here describing what they are dealing with and, frankly, what their colleagues are. I mean, they're three of many in the restaurant industry talking about this difficult winter, sort of the Omicron winter, that if we all lived in a perfect world, this would be the end of the pandemic surge and we'd be moving towards endemicity, and it's going to be a very different spring and summer and a very different feeling. Nobody knows, but they need it. The industry it's tough. Time magazine says it's impossible to make a profit. Well, I don't know if it's impossible, but it's very, very hard. 85% of American restaurants report having essentially lost profits or no margin compared to 2 years ago before the pandemic. I mean, that's a really, really hard spot to be in. So after we take this only break of the hour, we'll share more listener feedback. Are you going out to eat now? Are you ready to go back out to eat? Are you feeling like, kind of like Kelly mentioned, you know, maybe you're not only fully vaccinated and boosted, maybe you've had COVID, maybe you're just waiting for the numbers to change. They are changing every day. They are getting better. I'm not declaring any sort of victory. Nobody email me and say, I haven't said the pandemic's over, and it's not. But it's definitely finally seeing the downside of that curve, just like we saw in South Africa, just like we've seen in the UK, just like the Boston wastewater data is telling us in the Northeast there, just like New York City is experiencing. It's the right trend. And now the question is there enough of a resurgence that's going to save some businesses that are on the edge here? So we'll take that break, and we'll come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections. It's been a year since the Strong Ethics Committee at the University of Rochester Medical Center issued its ideas for how URMC could better serve the community more equitably, better access for all, not just the wealthy. How do they think things have changed in the last year? We'll find out on Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Briefly, let me ask our guests before I get back to more of your emails and feedback here. I just want to hear from your guests. When you saw the Time Magazine headline, I'm going to read it again. It said, profit doesn't exist anymore in restaurants. That's a little hyperbolic, Art, or is it not? I mean, is that how you're feeling lately?
We haven't made a profit since this started.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just sort hopefully of, that'll come back.
Okay, right. So for the moment, it's just survival.
Yeah.
Okay, Kelly?
Same. We're living in debt, trying to just get through until we're back to normal.
Kevin, what do you think?
Black was a nice color, but red is certainly more prevalent.
That is dark, man. That's really dark. So, Art, your biggest day of the year sometimes is Valentine's Day. Has that been historically the case at Lento?
Yeah, that's our big day. It's on a Monday this year, and we're normally closed, so that'll be a little extra.
So you'll be open on Valentine's Day.
Yeah,
you can make reservations now.
Yeah,
at Lento.
Yep,
you're going to be open. Okay.
Yes.
What is typically So that may be the biggest day of the year. Your biggest stretch of a month of the year is what month usually?
I would say October.
October?
Yeah. Late September, October. That's our busiest time. And May with the college graduations, mm-hmm. we get a really good push off of that.
Do you get the sense that maybe this year it'll be the summer months given everything going on, or do you expect it to be sort of back in that groove?
I mean, I like having the busy summer because we're not used to that. Hopefully that'll be a trend that continues. I'm sure there's plenty of folks that still want to sit outdoors, and we have great outdoor seating, and which does extend into the fall as well. But I would really love to get that busy fall and spring business back, which is about half of what it was pre-pandemic.
Kelly at Selena's and Knox, what's typically the biggest day of the year for your business?
Well, Selena's is Cinco de Mayo. And
makes sense.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. That doesn't really exist anymore. And that's usually when it starts our busy season. So we pretty much gauge, like, we can take our deep breaths the first week of May. So, like, once we get through winter and we start to get into spring, the first week of May is, like, our big deep breath over here.
Okay. But what do you expect the biggest month to be now compared to where it used to be, Kelly?
I think that we'll see the influx again. For Selena's, the summer has always been the busiest. Honestly, we pretty much plateau throughout the year. Like, we have bumps, but it's the when people come in. It's always been the winter. We were busier on the weekends and slower during the week. And in the summer, we'd be busier during the week and slower on the weekends. So it kind of evened out. Over at Knox, we had huge differences in weather. And we got a much bigger hit this summer than we've had in the past. So hopefully that will continue in the future.
Kevin, what about you? Is there a single day that stands out, and is there a month that's bigger than others for McCann's local meats?
We're pretty much like a holiday-driven business, right? And that's not, you know, by far December, right? For lots of different holidays that are going on and you know, gatherings and family and all of the tradition that goes along with it. But, you know, we do good on Father's Day. That's probably our number two. Which is much more of like a gift giving, like
dads love beef.
Yeah. Give them something to grill.
Yeah. Dad's getting a grill. So you might as well get dad some McCann's.
Exactly right.
That's pretty good. Okay. So let me work in some more feedback here. So first of all, Jackie Billings, from down in Perry, Hole in the Wall, among other ventures, she and Travis and the team down there, they're brilliant. They are, I've called them a force of nature in Perry, and every community should have folks like them, and they've been trying to hang in there too. Jackie's just wondering, curious whether the panel is experiencing a challenge with having enough staff to operate effectively. Art Rogers at Lento?
Sort of, when everyone's healthy. Like 2 weeks ago, we had to close on Saturday. It was kind of a perfect storm of things, but staff had COVID and some other people were out, and we didn't have enough staff to be open, so we just closed. I mean, we didn't have a choice. So we're like on a razor's edge. If someone calls in, we have to get really creative. If two or three people call in, it's our hands are tied in that. So, yeah, it's tight right now.
Yeah. Kelly, what about you?
We actually overhired going into the winter. We have no less than three, if not four, people scheduled most days. And that's not including management, because we had so many call-ins happening. And at the time, like, we were getting a lot of turnover too, where people would come in and work and then just not show up. So we figured, you know what, let's just overstaff. And then if it evens out, it evens out. And everybody stayed on. So we are still overstaffed. It came into a great handy moment this month. This was like the perfect storm of like everything we were terrified of mm-hmm. happening. So we were able to stay open and not have to shut down with all of the call-ins that we were having in the quarantines. So it didn't help my payroll budget, but we budgeted for that. Like, we knew it was going to be tough.
Gotcha. Kevin?
You know, it's interesting because there's always in this industry there's call-ins and there's staffing issues. And, you know, Kelly posted a great meme the other day that kind of really gets to it, that is not safe for your radio show. But, you know, there's always the six-pack blues that you get somebody calling with at 9 o'clock when they're supposed to be there at 10 o'clock or whatever. You know, now it's just it's specific to, you know, this specific illness and this time that we're living in. And, you know, it, just like anything else in this industry, you know, you're going to roll your sleeves up and get in dish, or you're going to, you know, take care of two sets of responsibilities when you were only planning on taking care of one, you know. And that's what owning a business and operating your business is all about. And, you know, you hope every day that you don't get the call in, but some days you do and some days you don't, and you just roll with it.
Jackie Billings follows up to say, I'm curious, did Kelly say she's operating in debt? That was a deal breaker for me. I could not rationalize borrowing money to cover payroll and product purchases. Kelly?
I am. And it's a decision that we made. We do have faith in our business. We're actually trying to grow our business as we're in debt. I don't think that this is our long-term situation. We've been open for 24 years now. We've seen crises. It's a different show if you want me to come on. What I've learned in this business and what we've dealt with crisis-wise, this is just the longest crisis, obviously. Usually crises in this business happen in, like, the short term. They may be almost as expensive, but, you know, you get through it. So for us, I know that is not a smart move for most people, but it is a decision that we decided to make. And I still firmly think that we, like I said earlier in the show, are going to come out of this.
And to speak to that just a little bit, sure. Like that's one of the main options that was given to us as a form of assistance for all businesses, not just restaurant, but like here, the government was saying to us here, go ahead and take on some, albeit low interest, but here, take on some debt while you're also experiencing lower revenue. And I, you know, I thought it was crazy at the time. I still think it's crazy. I still think that it was the lesser of two evils. But if it was all that you could do, then it was all that you could do. And, you know, and if you're going to be able to budget for it and plan for it and make it work for you, then by all means. But it wasn't exactly a great option that was put forward to business owners.
Okay. Art, anything to add here?
No, I think those two covered it.
Jim writes to say, Evan, for the restaurants that stopped serving lunch during the pandemic, I don't think they will ever start again. Jim's comment's an interesting one because I kind of wish Rochester and Western New York, we were more of a lunch region. We don't really go out for lunch that much to begin with, even pre-pandemic. But Jim's observation is like, lunch service might be dead now. That might be over. I don't know. Art, how do you see that?
I don't think I'm the right person to answer this because we're not open for lunch, but I know Kelly and Kevin are.
Have you ever thought about that? You ever thought about opening for lunch?
We tried it for like a year, and it just didn't take off.
See, you are the right person to ask.
Well, this was way before the pandemic.
No, but that's kind of the point here. I mean, like, we were never much of a lunchtime to begin with, were we?
I don't know. I was hoping we were. I mean, maybe that was just Lento. Like these. I mean, I go to McCann's for lunch on occasion, and it, you know, it seems pretty busy in there. And but
that's because there's nowhere else open.
I'm
no,
not sure.
I'm kidding.
Salinas is open.
I see. That's it. Let's talk about that. What's the lunch situation for you, Kelly?
So we had closed our lunches partially for staffing and scheduling availabilities. We had a lot of our lunch staff work lunch specifically because they have children and their kids were home. We hesitated to reopen because work kept not coming back, and we are in a neighborhood that relies heavily during the day on foot traffic from people being at work. So we kind of eased into our lunch and started opening and adding days. We are currently open Tuesday through Saturday. We have the staff here anyways because all of our food is getting cooked all day. So for us to open lunch, it was only adding like two people out front. So it wasn't a huge change. And we normally would run with maybe four people out front. So it's definitely not what it was before, but we are getting business and our staff is happy with it. So we'll continue it. So you can always come to lunch at Selena's or McCann's.
Do you think this will ever really be a lunch town, though?
I don't know about a lunch town. My personal experience is based on Selena's and Knox. Knox is actually opening for lunches as well because the coffee shop in Village Gate just closed, so we're working at doing a coffee program. My neighborhood itself is heavily reliant on office business, so it really is dependent on, for me, if that office business comes back.
Mm. Kevin, what's the take on lunch? How that's changed?
We're open. Come get it. come and get it. The way that our business is put together, it's a big piece of what we do, right? It's not the predominant source of revenue for the business, but it is certainly the difference between an okay day, a good day, and a bad day. Rochester kind of fancies itself a food city, a food, you know, people who live here kind of consider themselves in the group of people who would rate themselves as the quote unquote foodie. And, you know, for whatever I think about that term and that word and
I don't like
how
the word.
It's used, I mean, whatever, and neither do I, but some people love it. And
no,
that's
I get you.
How they identify,
yeah, I get
right?
you. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like some, like lunch food from an approachable, experimental, ethnic, from a being able to sort of more readily throw some variety into your diet, into what it is you eat. I think it's a cool thing. And I hope that more places do it. I hope that more places offer more cool things. And if they don't, McCann's Local Meat. we're open.
Let me get Robert in Fairport on the phone next. Hey, Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious to see if your panelists think that it would make any difference if we began kind of a pivot to just, look, everyone's going to get this. Let's not completely obsess about it. I think that people have been freaked out for the past 2 years. Some of the recent talk about, you know, everyone's got to go out, run out and get an N95 mask. It just seems like it's perpetuating the fear factor to the point where no one's want to go to a restaurant. You can't eat dinner with an N95 mask on. I don't care if there's a cutout in it or not. But it seems that this obsession about COVID has permanently hurt these restaurants. And it just seems like things would get better faster if we just dealt with the reality that we cannot control this.
Thank you, Robert. Let me start with Kevin McCann. What do you think, Kevin?
I think at the end of the day, we have a responsibility as a business to kind of cover both ends of this, right? Like, because there's going to be customers that come into my business that feel like him, that want to be able to express themselves and live their life in a specific way. And then there's people that feel exactly the opposite and are actively still trying to maintain safety for themselves, their community, the people next to them, who live with them, who live next door, who live in their community. And I think it's an interesting and difficult minefield to navigate as a business owner, to try to not feel like you're talking out of both sides of your face, but still take care of both subsets of your customer base.
Well, I think his concern is that the latter is hurting you, Kevin.
I think I don't think anybody specifically is hurting us, because I think even the people who are being cautious are still the people who are hypersensitive about how to maintain safety and health and not catch COVID and who have that at the top of their mind. I think those are also people who are still trying to do their best to shop with local business, and to, even though Art doesn't like to take out, they're still going to call him and want a duck breast in a box. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kelly, how do you see it?
I don't see that there's any one right or wrong answer for saving the industry or small business in general. I don't see any of the things that we talked about today as being restaurant specific things. I think that it's small business things. and that restaurant specific might, you know, obviously food costs and things like that go into effect. But I think that it's a small business thing. And if there was a generalized easy answer, then heck yeah, let's do it. But until then, like, just keep it, we keep doing what we can do to keep ourselves at bay so we can stay open. I like to tell people when they argue about masking, I'm like, if they want me to drizzle cilantro on your head to get you in the door, I'll drizzle cilantro on your head. Like, I just want to have you in and like feed you. so yeah, I don't see an easy answer to that. And I don't blame anybody for it either. And like Kevin said, you know, you're working both sides because you want people to feel comfortable no matter what.
Art, how do you see it?
Well, there's guidelines that we have to follow.
Again, I think Robert's saying the guidelines are too stringent and it's hurting you.
Well, I disagree with that, I suppose. I mean, at Lento, you have to, if you're not sitting down, eating and drinking, you just have to wear a mask. I don't think that's a huge inconvenience. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to wear a mask while you're sitting at the table. I don't know if people think that that's true. As soon as you sit down, you can remove your mask with your party
right, and
table.
I think what Robert's saying is that's inconsistent, that if the concern is indoor aerosolization, if we're taking our masks off to eat and to talk and to sit at the table for 2 hours, then why are we putting them on to walk to the bathroom? What's the difference here? And is it theater? Are we scaring ourselves? And I think that's where Robert is.
Yeah, that's above my pay grade. That's not a...
You're just going to follow
I didn't
rules.
Make that decision.
There you go. I got you. I got you. Okay. But I think maybe before I grab Chad in Seneca Falls, I'll take one more quick call. But just briefly then, can I ask all three of you real quick? I think Robert's concern is that some regulation, some intervention have gone too far and have harmed businesses when we need to find effective ways to move forward. Can you give government a grade on dealing with this pandemic from a business owner perspective? How has it been for you, Art?
I don't think the regulations have been too strict, and Monroe County has been super helpful as far as providing grants, albeit small ones. You know, I feel like they've been trying to help us.
So a decent grade for government.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'll give them a decent.
Okay. Kelly, you want to put a grade on government response to this pandemic from your perspective?
I have no problem necessarily with what the government has done. I think that as a society, we've struggled more dealing with this pandemic than the government. I, like I said, have been through a lot of crises running this business, and I've never been helped by the government before, so I can't hate them for that.
Yeah, I get you. What I see eroding too much is just kindness. I think we need more kindness and patience and love with one another. Kevin, you want to throw a grade on this?
I think that you're going to find you know, ambiguity and hypocrisy on anything if you examine it hard enough. And I think that everything involved with this has been so polarized that anybody in a position of policy making would have had a difficult time with it. I think that, you know, things have adapted and moved as new information has come out, and I think that's all I can ask for. So I would agree. Madison County, or excuse me, Monroe County, New York State, they've been great, and not a fail grade, that's for sure.
Okay, Chad in Seneca Falls, keep it tight. Go ahead, Chad.
Well, my observation is that I think this pandemic has accelerated a societal change in terms of lunch, specifically aimed at lunch, because when I was working downtown from 72 to about 1990, everybody had lunch every day. All the businesses were concentrated downtown. You went out and had lunch, you got business done, you got deals done. And it was a required thing. Admittedly, sometimes there was a drink with lunch, but it was the accepted standard daily activity of business people. And that's changed now. And people live, the businesses moved out of town. People live, work remotely. They don't have in a suburban office building. They don't have restaurants in the same way the downtown always had. So I think it's an exacerbation of an incredible change that has gone on over the last 30 years. Just my thoughts.
I appreciate that, Chad. And I'd like to endorse the notion of having a glass of wine with lunch again. Let's get back on that. But more seriously, I do wonder, and maybe this is a conversation for Jackie and others in more rural settings, if that's changed at all in rural settings. But it's an interesting observation for sure. And I appreciate that, Chad. Just 25 seconds apiece. What do you need next or hope next? What's going to make 2022? You're an optimist, Art. You said you're being positive. What do you need?
We just need Omicron to go away and not have a new variant pop up where that one left off. And I think, you know, we'll, everything will go back to normal-ish. I don't know if it'll ever go back to normal, but I think things will get better if this is, you know, really the tail end of this pandemic.
And you're an optimist in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, the news, I listen to XXI all day, and they're telling me what you were just saying. Like, yep. It's moving in the right direction, so.
Okay. Kelly, what do you need?
Be kind. That's
oh.
it.
Oh, boy, I love that. It's so good.
I'll second that.
Kevin?
Man, I love me some love, too, so I'll take some kindness. You know, 3 weeks away from Valentine's Day, it's good for Art, it's good for Kelly, it's good for me, it's good for everybody. Yeah, go out there, be nice.
Well, that's a really lovely way of closing this conversation with Art, Kelly, and Kevin. In a way, kind of repping their many colleagues in this industry who have had a tough 2 years, and many are just hanging in. You know, Kelly talked about operating in debt and just trying to get to the other side of this thing. So we'll see. But here's to a very different and stronger 2022. Art Rogers, you'll find Art at Lento. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Kelly over at Salinas and Knox and the Village Gate. Wonderful. Kelly, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Kevin McCann, McCann's Local Meats. Good for dads, but not just dads. No, I mean, I get the Father's Day thing. It's good for everybody. Hey, Kevin, thanks very much for being with us.
Peace, love, and meat, y'all.
Peace, love, and meat. From everyone here, I'm Evan Dawson, Megan Mack, Emma Stein, Rob Bradenshang. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow on member-supported public radio.